Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
What is good, everyone? Coming up on the KGW 3-on-3 Blazers podcast, trade deadline has come and gone. Rip City, how you feeling? And did James Harden ruin the Blazers' plan? What is up with that? And Joe Cronin blows up the roster. Can his plan work? Let's stop messing around. Start the show. Oh, it is so good to be back. What is good, everyone? Welcome to KGW's 3-on-3 Blazers podcast. My name is Orlando, joined as always by Jared Cowley. We are doing this thing in downtown Portland inside the KGW studios. Jared, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm kind of sad that the trade deadline has passed because I love trade deadline week and everything that leads up to it. It's also kind of a relief, though, because it's just rumor after rumor after rumor and so many reports and what's going to happen. So it's a relief, but I'm also kind of sad that has passed. And now all we have to look forward to is a bunch of tanking.
Yeah, man. Lose early and lose often, except yes. To the Lakers.
I'm not even going to go there. Like, I still wanted that loss. You know, even the chance to take down LeBron and the Lakers, I still wanted the L instead.
I loved the dynamic that was playing out in that game. It was super exciting. And I find myself more interested in this team than I have been in a very long time because of all the changes that have gone on over the past 10 days or so involving this team. We have seen something that has happened for the first time in a very long time. The roster has been shaken up. Interim general manager Joe Cronin has come in and done the unthinkable. A big change from what we're used to here in Rip City. The end of an era.
Yes, absolutely.
CJ McCollum, now a member of the New Orleans Pelicans. He also traded away some key pieces. Norman Powell, Robert Covington, Tony Snell, Larry Nance Jr., this roster looks totally different right now. Jared, I want to bring you in. After three deals were done leading up to the trade deadline, what is your initial reaction to what Joe Cronin has done to this roster?
The teardown had to happen. Mm-hmm. It had to happen. It had to happen. Everybody knew that. Everybody in the world knew that except for Neil O'Shea, who refused to do it for years and years and years. And so I think that's why it is exciting. I think that's why the team is more interesting now, is because there are possibilities. Mm-hmm. There's flexibility. And this roster, this team had become so stagnant and so boring. And now, you know, the team's bad. I mean, this might be the worst roster in the NBA.
Right.
But they're at least interesting to watch. There's a lot of possibilities of what can happen in the summer. And so the teardown had to happen. You can maybe gripe about the return and what, you know, Joe Cronin was able to get by trading away, you know, one of the team's best all-time players, several starters. But I think I can only say this, and please believe me, there were not better offers out there. Mm-hmm. This was the best Joe Cronin could do, especially when taking into consideration what his plan was. He wasn't going to take back long-term money. He wasn't going to take back much money at all that went past this season. This was all part of his plan. Other teams knew he had to get under the luxury tax, so that was an imperative that he was working with. And so there were not going to be, I mean, the Blazers could have got a first-round pick probably if they had been willing to take back a bad contract or money that went, you know, into next season or beyond. But with all the things that Cronin was trying to accomplish and trying to create all of that cap flexibility for this summer, he did the best he could. And I think if you look at the CJ McCollum trade, I think that was actually really good value for CJ McCollum. I think that we had an idea in the past that someone like CJ McCollum could turn around and get you, if you added the right assets to him, you know, a James Harden or, you know, a superstar player. And maybe several years ago that could have happened. But at this point in CJ's career, the age, the contract, they weren't going to get any kind of value like that in return. And that was plainly evident because we saw what seemed like a perfect fit in a Ben Simmons trade, but was just never, ever going to happen. That the rest of the NBA does not view CJ McCollum the same way the Blazers did with Neil O'Shea as GM. And so I think that Joe Cronin did the very best he could, got the best return he could, and now there are possibilities. And so I think that makes it interesting. Is it going to work out? Who knows? I mean, Cronin said yesterday himself, now the hard part comes, and that's very true. I disagree with him that it was easy to tear this thing down. I don't think that's easy. For one thing, it's a bold move. You have to, you know, have a plan, a bold plan, and be willing to execute it no matter what. He did that. I also think to get the level of return he did for players who were undervalued assets for whatever reason, I think that that was not as easy as some people made it out to be or thought that it would be. To get a really, really valuable first-round pick in that Pelicans deal, to get four second-round picks, to get a really, you know, I don't want to say a really good player, a good player in Josh Hart, to get some interesting young players. All of that provides assets that the Blazers can use in trades to enhance this team, you know, down the road, or interesting players that can become part of the next iteration of the Blazers. You know, Josh Hart, we'll talk about this more, but like Josh Hart could be a starter down the road. They have a couple guys who could be, you know, rotation, you know, players. And so I think Cronin did a good job. This had to happen. He has a bold plan. I am appreciative of that. And he executed it. That was step one. Now the fun part, the interesting part, the hard part comes with step two and what happens next.
Yeah, I remember texting you when the first trade went down and basically you saying, wow, the value of these guys to the rest of the league.
Yeah.
It was surprising that the Blazers weren't able to get more from a guy like Norman Powell or Robert Covington. And if the value wasn't there for those two, what was the value going to be for CJ McCollum? I think we learned a lot about the way other teams around the league see these players versus how people hear see their own players. And sometimes you're blinded by your own guys because you see them on a daily basis, but it's not always the case. And so that was probably the number one thing that I noticed was just, man, I thought these guys might have been worth a little bit more when it came time to make a deal. And so I understand the frustration that some Blazers fans were feeling, especially after the first deal. But then it started to pick up a little steam. You started to see some momentum, and the vision, the path that Cronin and company were starting to build was taking shape, especially with the McCollum deal. Yeah, like you want to see a star come back right away. That makes the most sense. It's tougher to tear down everything and have an empty lot, and you're selling people on your vision for what your new home is going to look like without actually getting the pieces there. Right. That's tough.
Yeah.
So to hear and see the outrage on Blazers Twitter and from other fans, like, I hear you, I get it. If you want to go that way and you're upset at Cronin and you don't like what's happening, that's fine. That's fine. Like, you had your eight consecutive playoff appearances. It's going to be tough to suck, and you might suck for a while.
Yep.
So I understand that, especially this year. Like, they are headed for the lottery, and they have an opportunity to to really have some great odds at securing one of those gems in this draft. And that's what I'm looking at now is really the things that they're coveting are those draft picks and those first round draft picks that they have. And so right now it's patience. They're asking you to, let's see this thing through first. But I get it. If you want to be mad at not getting much in return for Norman Powell on the surface, that's cool. But just know that Joe Cronin wasn't the guy that used almost the entire salary cap to on 3-6-3 guards to make that happen.
Absolutely. And you also know that Norman Powell is a good player.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a great player. He's a good player, and I think he's properly compensated right now.
Mm-hmm.
But Neil O'Shea signed him to a 5-year deal. You don't see 5-year deals in the NBA very often. And so the last 2 years of that deal made him a less valuable trade asset. Because if he was on like a 3-year contract, then I think you definitely get a lot more value. But considering he had another 4th year on top of that and then a 5th year, both paying him about $20 million, that's a lot for a team to commit to. And there just weren't a lot of teams out there that wanted to commit to that many years of Norman Powell as much as they like Norman Powell right now. Mm-hmm. And so you have to consider the salary and how that affects someone's trade value.
Right. The value of these contracts,
right,
the amount of years that are on them, and the salary cap altogether was super enlightening this time around to see how the rest of the league really valued all of that stuff together, because clearly that is very important. And even Joe Cronin mentioned that in his press conference on Thursday at the team's practice facility. By the way, if you haven't heard it, we got it on the previous podcast. Listen to it. It's there in its entirety. And I'd love to hear what you guys think about it as well. Hit up Jared and I on Twitter. Let us know what your reaction is after you listen to that one as well. But even Joe Cronin had mentioned how other teams were using that against them, being at the table. And clearly the Blazers were fed up with that being part of them trying to get a deal done, is that teams were able to offer less or offer, you know, not true value on something because they knew that the Blazers were backed into a corner and they were tired of that. And they said, no, we're not going to do this. We're going to go in. We're going to have all the tools necessary to be able to get a deal done from multiple directions. And that's the first part of all of this.
Yep.
Now, there's also the disappointing part on trade deadline day where you're thinking, let's go out and we've created space. We've got money to play with now. Let's go get us somebody, an immediate piece where we say, oh, I see what they're doing. It's obvious now. Let's check in with the Pistons. Let's check in with Philadelphia. Let's get that 3 and D. Let's get us a 4. We're cooking now. And it didn't happen. They struck out in terms of trying to get that big piece right away. And so that's where the patience comes in.
Yeah.
That's where they've got to do something to prove it. You know, and the rest of the league did not do the Blazers any favors during the trade deadline, Jared. Blockbuster deal on trade deadline day. James Harden, Ben Simmons, the swap, the Eastern Conference is loaded. Everyone's pumped up to see these teams in the playoffs. But how did that impact the Trail Blazers?
Yeah, outside of how it impacted the Trail Blazers, I, as an NBA fan, I loved that trade.
It was dope.
There's so many interesting storylines
that
come out of just that one trade.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see how it affects the Nets and how Embiid and Harden gel together, how that works. It's going to be fascinating. But I think that Joe Cronin and the Blazers, their plan A was 100% Ben Simmons. And you saw that information get out there. Sam Amick had the report in The Athletic about what the 76ers plan was going to be, because they wanted James Harden.
Mm-hmm.
The 76ers right now were not interested in anything the Blazers were offering to get Ben Simmons. They wanted James Harden. And so they were like, if this trade does not happen right now, then we're going to sign James Harden as a free agent. Harden's going to opt out, you know, this summer, and we're going to sign him as a free agent. How do you do that if you're the Sixers and you have all these big salaries? Well, that's where a team like the Blazers would come into play. The 76ers would be looking to deal Ben Simmons to a team that could absorb his salary. He makes $33 million next season. So you'd have to have a team that is that far underneath the cap so they could take Ben Simmons onto their team without having to send any salary back. so that the Sixers wipe that salary completely off their books. And then the Blazers had put themselves in a really good position to, because there were going to be several teams that could do that, not just the Blazers. But now they have the potential of two lottery picks this summer that if other teams were like, okay, we'll take Ben Simmons in, here's how we're going to sweeten the pot for you, we'll give you this or this, those two lottery picks were going to make the Blazers very hard to beat.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Simmons was going to be a Blazer if that trade didn't happen on trade deadline day. But then Harden blew the whole thing up.
Mm.
Because on trade deadline morning, you saw the reports come out from everyone's favorite NBA reporters, Woj and Shams, and everybody were reporting that James Harden wanted to ask the Nets to trade him to the Sixers, but he was afraid of the public backlash if he left another team like he did with the Rockets. Now, nobody cared about James Harden.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of his loyal fan base, all other NBA fans don't like James Harden. So the whole public backlash thing was nonsense anyway. But what that did is it allowed, it put the pressure on the Nets.
Right.
They can't come back from that. Mm-hmm. James Harden can't come back to the Nets after something like that breaks. Mm-hmm. There's no way that information got out without James Harden giving it his stamp of approval. So he forced the Nets' hand. So the Nets had to trade him to the 76ers. And because that happened, plan A, Joe Cronin, you saw what he was doing. He was making it possible so that the Blazers could clear $35 million in cap room, exactly the amount they needed to take Ben Simmons into cap room this summer. That was plan A, and James Harden blew it way under the water. So, Blazers fans, if you didn't already hate James Harden, you can hate him even more now, because if you wanted Ben Simmons, he's the reason Ben Simmons isn't a Blazer.
What a punch in the gut. Truly. I mean, we talked about this before the pod, and it was like, dude, even Vegas, yeah, odds makers, had the Blazers as the favorite to land Ben Simmons.
Yep.
Like, the home run, the grand slam for the Portland Trail Blazers roster to pair alongside Damian Lillard. You got the guy that can defend 1 through 4 or even 1 through 5.
Yep.
That was the dude. So to see that plan not play out, ugh.
It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, to be in the Blazers front office and sit there and see that trade go down on the day. You were so close to escaping till the end of the year. Ugh.
Because it was not a sure thing that that trade was going to happen. And James Harden played it expertly because that's the way he operates. And he forced the hand of the Nets just like he forced the hand of the Rockets. The last time he did it by loafing on the court and having a bad attitude and making it so untenable to keep him in Houston that they had to trade him. And this time he did it by appealing to the masses. Oh, I'm so afraid that people are going to be mad at me.
Harden is elite at getting out of town and going wherever he wants.
Yep.
I mean, it is incredible. And he is an example of what can be done when you have a big contract, you got a big star, and you're wondering how you get him out of town. He's got the blueprint right there, folks. But that is just a total buzzkill for the Trailblazers who, and this is part of the deal. It may not work out, but you got to be in position because the worst thing that could have happened would have been Simmons is still there and you didn't do enough
right. To
get him.
Right.
And to hear maybe he was open to the idea
of
playing with Damian Lillard. So you move on.
And Cronin did everything he needed to be in position to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, like you said, then it's on to plan B. And who was plan B? Jeremy Grant.
Yep.
But what the Blazers were anticipating might happen, hoping would happen, is that as it got closer to noon,
mm-hmm,
the trade deadline, that the Pistons would back off of their asking price of 2 first-round picks.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Blazers didn't have 2 first-round picks. Right now, they had one that they could offer,
mm-hmm,
the pick they got from the Pelicans. They can't offer any of their picks because they're all tied up through like 2027 because of that Larry Nance trade.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Neil O'Shea. So they were hoping that the Pistons would come down on their asking price. I think that they would have put that Pelicans pick into a trade if the Pelicans had come down and just said, okay, 1 first-round pick, maybe a couple seconds. But the Pistons never did.
Mm-hmm.
They never budged. And so I think you give credit to Joe Cronin for recognizing that, guess what? That possibility, Jeremy Grant is still going to be available in the summer. You don't have to, you know, imagine if the Blazers had been able to put those two first round picks in. That's too much for Jeremy Grant.
Right.
That's too much.
They didn't overpay.
Yeah.
And they didn't panic.
Right. So have a plan. Stick to it. Don't overreact. Don't, you know, sign a player who should only be signed to a 3-year contract to a 5-year contract. Don't, you know, sign an extension for one of your star shooting guards when he doesn't need that extension. Those are the kind of things that Neil O'Shea did that got this roster into trouble, got this team into trouble where they were stuck, they were trapped. And Joe Cronin has a plan, and he sticks to it, and he doesn't overreact.
Yeah, they,
and that's awesome.
Didn't ruin what they just created.
Right.
By going all in on Jeremy Grant. Like, I'm a fan. I want him on the team.
I like Jeremy Grant, too. I know a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if a lot of people. There are certainly people out there. Our good friends, Nate Hansen and Max Barr, we still text with them all the time. I know neither of them are interested or excited about Jeremy Grant. But I think that he is a great fit. What is the one position that the Blazers have not been able to fill adequately since LaMarcus Aldridge left? It's power forward. That's the position Jeremy Grant plays. What does Chauncey Billups want to do? He wants, you know, strong defenders with length who can switch and guard out on the perimeter and guard inside. Jeremy Grant's a fantastic defensive player at the four, and he's shown enough offense in Detroit to be a viable second or third option on offense to Damian Lillard, whereas he could really help improve the Blazers' defense because he's still a fantastic defensive player. So I like Jeremy Grant. I get if you don't. He's not a great three-point shooter. He's not super efficient. I mean, he definitely has flaws, but I think that he'd be a great fit next to Damian Lillard.
Right. And so here we are. You look at the roster now. It's pretty rough. It's lopsided. There's too many guards. One of the worst rosters in the NBA, as you mentioned. Probably the worst roster in the NBA. So we look at Joe Cronin's plan here. What do you think about it, Jared, the direction that they're going? Because, you know, he mentioned at the press conference, look, we don't want to play that style of basketball anymore. We were backed into a corner. We had to do all of these things to get here. And as you mentioned, now the hard part begins. And that's building players around Damian Lillard and to do it quickly because they've reached kind of a crossroads eventually after this season in terms of full blow up versus building around Damian Lillard.
Absolutely.
So what do you think about his plan overall? What you took away from that press conference that they did?
I mean, I think it's a bold plan. I don't think you're guaranteed success. I think for one thing, please, if you don't understand that clearing all this cap space is not about free agency, please understand that it is not about free agency. The Blazers aren't going to try and go make a move. I mean, this isn't a very strong free agent class to begin with. The best players in free agency, you know, DeAndre Ayton, you know, Miles Bridges, they are restricted free agents. So you're not even guaranteed you throw a max deal to them. You're not even guaranteed that their current team doesn't match that. That's not the Blazers' plan. They have this cap space for flexibility. If a superstar player, a disgruntled superstar comes available, the Blazers, for the first time in years, have the flexibility and the assets to make it happen. And so now it's interesting too, because it's not just Cronin's plan. I think a lot of this now falls on Dame. Dame has to recruit and persuade in ways that he has never, ever done in his career.
Or has not been good at.
Right.
I mean, they couldn't even get Melo here.
Exactly.
They had to wait till Melo ran out of options and was out of the league before convincing him to get here.
Yeah. So maybe he can't do it. You know, maybe that's just not something Dame's good at. I mean, it's definitely not a sure thing. We don't know if superstars are going to become available. And then we don't know if that happens, if Dame is going to be able to convince them to, listen, Portland is better than you hear and than you think. Come play with me. We're going to build up a good roster. We're going to contend. Whether Dame can accomplish that, you know, I don't know. But if he can, then the Blazers at least have put themselves in a position to then make it happen.
That's just one of the avenues, right? I mean, historically, we know the Blazers have sucked at getting free agents here that are, you know, game-changing stars. Yeah. It just doesn't happen. We understand that. The front office understands that. Neil Olshey made that clear over and over and over again.
Yep.
We all get that. But you got to be in position to be able to do that in case that does happen, that lightning does strike.
Right.
You're ready for that. But the flexibility and freedom to do it in other ways where you're not just hoping that you can recruit a guy, but you can force a guy through trade to get to Portland. And then he gets here and realizes, oh, I like it. This works for me. I fit here. I like playing with Damian Lillard. Whatever it is that they like, that free agent or person you're trading for likes, that's where they're at right now. And yes, this could blow up in their face. Like, this could end really bad. And you see the roster that you're stuck with or whatever it ends up being.
But I think that's even a stretch that it could end really bad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if your only objective is that Dame has to win a championship, then yes, it could end badly. But like, very few NBA teams win championships. I'm 44 years old. I've been a Blazers fan for as long as I can remember, and the Blazers have never won a championship in my lifetime. I missed the championship season by, you know, 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
So like, yes, shoot for that. Absolutely, 100%. But don't have unrealistic expectations that is the be-all, end-all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can still build a really good roster around Damian Lillard and then just hope that lightning strikes.
Yeah.
And that's a perfectly fine way to be. And so I think that even if a superstar, and who knows what superstars are going to become available. We didn't know that Domantas Sabonis, like a month ago, we didn't know that he was going to be available in trade. We didn't know that.
Happens all the time.
We didn't know that James Harden was unhappy in Brooklyn was going to, you know, demand to be traded.
He can't stand sage around his locker.
Exactly. You just don't know. I mean, who's going to come available this summer? I don't know. Maybe it's Jaylen Brown. Maybe the Celtics and all the problems they're having, maybe they, you know, lose in the first round or the second round of the playoffs again, and he's like, I want out.
Yeah.
And Dame's on the phone with him and talking to him, and that becomes a possibility.
The playoffs make dreams come true, but they also break up teams.
Exactly.
And so a team is going to fall flat in the playoffs, and they're going to want to blow it up. Yep. They're going to want to make deals. And they got Joe Cronin's phone number. Like, he's going to be right there to help you get over this breakup. So that's where the Trailblazers are with all of this. And I know a lot of people don't want to talk about it. Damian Lillard got pissed off when Jason Quick brought this up.
Yeah.
But is there a chance that the Blazers could get to that point where they say, you know what, we're not going to be able to be a contender and build around Damian Lillard? Do we trade him away?
There's a chance. I mean, I think that Joe Cronin is not the general manager yet. He's still the interim general manager.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Blazers say they're still going to go through a full-scale search. I mean, there's a possibility that Joe Cronin is not willing to trade Damian Lillard, and the ownership is going to do this search and bring in a general manager whose objective is that, to trade Damian Lillard. I don't know. I mean, nobody knows that at this point. But that could happen. Another thing is, you know, if they don't get a superstar, if we're halfway through the season next year, you know, it's a, you know, good but young, interesting but not very good roster. The Blazers are 500 or so. Then maybe at that point, Damian Lillard is like, yes, I've done everything I can for Portland. It's time to go.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is absolutely 100% still a possibility. And, you know, we were talking about this before the podcast, and you kind of mentioned it. James Harden provided the blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
The whole appealing to the masses thing doesn't work for James Harden because nobody likes him.
Mm-hmm.
But people love Damian Lillard. And if he allows, you know, a year from now, trade deadline morning, next year things aren't working out, Dame wants out, and he allows that information to get out there, Chris Haynes comes out with a tweet that Damian Lillard wants to ask the Blazers to trade him, but he's afraid of disappointing his fans in Portland. He's afraid of the public backlash.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to rally behind Damian Lillard. And that will force the Blazers' hand, and then they'd be forced to trade him.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, it could absolutely happen. That's not, you know, there's no guarantee that he's going to be here the rest of his career. But what the Blazers have to do, and what Joe Cronin has done, and what I think they'll do this summer, is he's not making any kind of move that jeopardizes the ability to pivot quickly to to a full-scale rebuild if it comes to the point where Damian Lillard is going to be traded. And so I don't think that unless a superstar player becomes available,
mm-hmm.
I don't think this summer you're going to see any long-term contracts. I don't think you're going to see them put those really valuable potential lottery picks that they have this summer in trades unless it's for a superstar.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you draft really good young players who are going to be part of the core that if Damian Lillard leaves, then, you know, along with Anthony Simons and Nasir Little, that's, you know, the next team, Blazers team going forward. So I think that this whole, like, creating flexibility, I think that if Cronin is the general manager, then I think that he's going to preserve that flexibility, maintain that flexibility, unless it's for a superstar. But for just, you know, a good player, mm-hmm. I don't think that you're not going to jeopardize that flexibility.
And
that's just my opinion. I think it's educated opinion,
mm-hmm.
but I think that he's not going to long-term money. That's not going to be a thing that happens unless it's for a superstar.
Right. And listening to the press conference Thursday, I believe it was Aaron Fentress who asked about how they've created this flexibility from the standpoint of, yes, you've created this path, but there's also the ability to take an exit along this highway. And that exit could be making a deal for Damian Lillard if this all doesn't go well. And Cronin didn't really address that part of the question. And it was more about building around Dame. But what he did say is how they've been in constant communication with Damian Lillard.
Right.
And so Dame has known about this vision, what the plan is. And I wouldn't be surprised if Dame has a say in it. I don't know if he would have veto power, but I do think he is heavily involved in whatever they decide to do with these changes. He knew about CJ way ahead of time. CJ knew about CJ way ahead of time, to the point that they were bouncing teams off of each other. They were discussing what would be a great spot for CJ, who they felt they owed it to after, you know, having a top 10, top 15 Blazer of all time type of career here.
For sure, yeah.
And so I did like that along this road, they've built some transparency with what they're doing. So if we do get to a point next year, because Dame's clock is ticking.
Absolutely.
His prime. That's been a theme of this podcast for as long as I can remember.
The next time he plays,
mm-hmm.
he's going to be 32 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he is at the tail end of his prime now. Like, now's the moment. And I can't believe that Damian Lillard wants to, you know, finish his career without a real chance at winning a championship. And
right.
if it's in Portland, that's his preference.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's not, I still think it's 100%, you know, in the cards that he asks to be traded one way or another, whether it's kind of through the Harden way
mm-hmm.
or, you know, just having an honest conversation with Joe Cronin saying, listen, mm-hmm. it's time.
Yep. Yep. And so I think that's where the urgency is to get something done this summer.
Right.
And why, and Cronin mentioned this, that they're going to be aggressive.
Yeah.
In trying to get something done, and they're not going to run away from stuff because they can't. That path becomes a dead end if they can't bring a star here to pair with Damian Lillard. Like, Dame has to see significant progress soon.
Yep.
And props to Dame for being like, all right, let's do this. I'm in on this plan. But if we're not any better, or if we're in that same place, I'm wasting time. And I want a championship. That means a lot to me now in my career. And so as much as the front office wants to, you know, temper expectations and say, look, this is going to take us a little bit of time. We want to do this and that. Here's our vision. Sometimes it doesn't work out that way. At the same time, they're putting their chips in, and they're going for it. So that's why they're not in full rebuild mode where you get rid of Dame and you bring back as many draft picks as you can and just completely start over, because they believe that they can build around Damian Lillard right now and still have the opportunity to make another run and at least be in the conversation for a championship.
Yeah, I think they 100% believe that if a superstar becomes available, mm-hmm. that they are going to be able to go get him.
Right.
Both with Dame, you know, even before, if Dame was able to, was going to recruit, it was hard to recruit a superstar to come to the Blazers.
Right.
Because you had CJ and you had all these other pieces, and a superstar could look at that and be like, where do I fit in? But now it's like, I fit next to Dame. That's all that, there's nothing else on the roster. I mean, Anthony Simons, absolutely 100%. He's the future. But a superstar will look at it and be like, I'm going to go join Dame, and then the rest of the team's going to be built around us. And so I think that that conversation can be much, much more convincing now. But I think what's smart, and I really don't think that any big moves are made unless it's a superstar.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and, you know, they could, I don't consider Jeremy Grant a superstar.
No.
I think that's a, you know, I mean, you look at Jeremy Grant, when does his contract end? After next season. So that fits into that whole equation, that if that didn't work out and Dame asked out, then, you know, you're not tied to Jeremy Grant.
But if he's your third guy, what do you think of that?
Yes, absolutely. That would be great.
Yep.
And even if they, like, weren't able to get a superstar and they ended up getting Jeremy Grant this summer, then that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because maybe things just gel and the team is much better than you think. But I think that they're going to keep these two possible paths open,
mm-hmm.
that if they go down this road and they're able to get a superstar to pair with Dame and the Blazers are a much better team, that's a great path. But I don't think that it's going to blow up in their face as long as they keep this other
mm-hmm.
path open, that if Dame asks out, if plan A doesn't work, mm-hmm. and they have to transition, then you've got Anthony Simons, you have Nasir Little, Keon Johnson is an interesting player. I know he hasn't shown much so far in his rookie season, but this dude, like, he slipped because people were concerned about his shot, and that's fine. He's not a very good shooter. He's much right now. He projects as a great defensive player, and his offense is very raw.
Mm-hmm.
Has a long way to go, but he was a projected like top 10 pick,
mm-hmm.
you know, around the time of the NBA draft combine. You know, he was, it reminds me of Nasir Little.
Mm-hmm.
He was a projected top 10 pick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the week leading up to the draft, he slipped to the Blazers and they got him, and you see what he is becoming now. So I like Keon Johnson. They have these two first round picks. I mean, hopefully the Blazers are able to get some lottery luck and get one of these top three, top four picks.
Mm-hmm.
But even if they don't, you know, you get a top five, top six, top seven pick. That's a really interesting, good young player to build around. You get another lottery pick from the Pelicans, which I think is more realistic than not that pick is going to convey this year. That's another lottery pick. You have all this cap space. You have flexibility. That's an interesting, fun, you know, following a rebuild with interesting, good young players and watching them develop. That's a really fun way to be a fan as well. And so I think they have, I don't think this is going to blow up in Cronin's face, because he's given it the flexibility to be awesome if they get a superstar with Dame, and to be fun and sustainable and able to build on itself if they have to pivot away from Dame and go to a full rebuild.
See, look, folks, Jared is giving you optimism here. We also learned that you should hate James Harden as a Blazers fan, and you're rooting for the Pelicans to suck. It seems like a very simple recipe here that we've provided for you guys to cook with. Jared, do any of the new players that the Blazers have acquired excite you? You know, Josh Hart. I know that I think a lot of people wanted to see the Eric Bledsoe deal be dealt.
Yeah.
And that didn't happen. That seems like a popular disappointment.
Yeah.
Your overall thoughts, are there guys that stand out to you? I know you mentioned Keon already.
Yeah, I like Keon Johnson just because he's interesting as a young player.
Mm-hmm.
And also because of the Blazers player development system.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've proven that, I mean, they've been good for years at that, and they're still good. I mean, you look at the improvement. I thought last season and even early this season that CJ Elleby was not going to be an NBA player,
mm-hmm.
that he wasn't going to make it past his rookie contract.
That was a popular opinion, man,
yeah.
For real.
And I think that, like, listen, at best right now, I mean, he's on a good team. He's like a late rotation player, like mm-hmm. a deep rotation player. But he's shown so much improvement. Mm-hmm. And you've seen that. I mean, look at the development of Anthony Simons. Look at the development of Nasir Little. The Blazers know how to develop young players. So mm-hmm. I'm really interested in a player like Keon Johnson who is, listen, his defense is awesome already, just as a rookie. And so interested to see him develop. But Josh Hart, you know, he's a player who, depending on whether a superstar comes to Portland, you know, who knows if Josh Hart will still be here. I mean, there's so many things that are up in the air. But I think Josh Hart could be a starter for the Blazers going forward. I think he could start at small forward, and if not, he could certainly play be their sixth man. He can play the two, the three, and the four. I think that Justice Winslow, I think he's showing that he could be a deep rotation player. Mm-hmm. You know, if he's your eighth or ninth guy off the bench next year, I think he could be a good, you know, a good backup four. The young guys are all intriguing. Who knows? You know, player development, you know, I think that unless they're used in trades, you know, I think that they'll all be here next season. Elijah Hughes, I think, is in a final year of his rookie deal, so who knows if he comes back, but they're intriguing. And I think Joe Ingles, if depending on what else happens with the roster, he's an intriguing possibility. I wouldn't totally shut the door on him coming back to Portland next season. I also think he might go back to Utah next season.
Mm-hmm.
But Joe Ingles is, you know, he's older. He's 34, so he'd be, you know, an older veteran. But he's a nice 3-and-D player. I mean, I've always liked Joe Ingles, so I wouldn't totally shut the door on that. I mean, I think they got some interesting players in these deals.
So, Jared, what excites you about the rest of the year? Is it as simple as tanking? Lose early, lose often?
Yeah, the tank is fun.
Yeah.
You know, you still watch the standings. Portland has the eighth worst record in the NBA right now. They're only a game and a half ahead of the Kings and the Spurs, who are right behind them.
Right.
So you keep an eye on those two teams. You scoreboard watch, and you root for both of those teams to just win. They're only three games ahead of the Pacers, four games ahead of the Thunder. There's a possibility that the Blazers could get to where they have the fourth or fifth worst record in the league and give themselves a real good percentage chance at getting one of those top four picks. And I think that you can start watching college basketball now. Watch Duke games, Paolo Banchero, A.J. Griffin, watch Memphis, Jalen Duran, watch Gonzaga, Chet Holmgren, watch Auburn, Jabari Smith, watch Iowa, Keegan Murray. I mean, these are all players that could be
future
Blazers next season.
Trailblazers.
Start watching college basketball.
Yeah.
You can root against the Pelicans. The Pelicans are 11 games under 500.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're 3.5 games back of the ninth place Lakers, 4 games back of 8th, and 7 games back of 7th. It's going to be hard for them to move up. And so they have the 8th hardest remaining schedule in the NBA this season.
Mm.
Root for them to lose, not lose all their games, because you don't want them to get one of those top four picks.
Right. That would be such a disaster, wouldn't it?
Horrible. The Blazers, like, drop out of that, and the Pelicans get in, and that would be the worst of both worlds. But you root for the Pelicans to lose. I think that there's a lot to still be interested in this season. You know, this is just because the Blazers are bad doesn't mean there aren't things to be interested in what happens the rest of the season and then looking forward to the summer.
I got to say, that Lakers game was a lot of fun to watch.
It was fun.
I mean, I think you found joy in watching that game if you were a non-Blazers fan.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a Lakers hater, obviously.
Right.
And if you're a Lakers fan, you hated every second.
Yeah.
But generally speaking,
some of the comments from like James Worthy.
My goodness, when Magic Johnson,
a YMCA team.
Woof. I saw, I mean, Lakers Twitter was on fire. But that game was super entertaining. That was the most excited I can remember Damian Lillard being in a very long time. Seeing his cousin hit pivotal three-pointers in that game. Kelton Blevins coming through for the Blazers. And
Kelton Blevins game.
Yes, that's how we'll remember that one. And seeing Anfernee do Anfernee stuff.
That was the whole thing for me.
Once he gets going, man, it's too late.
Because he was 2-for-10, 2-for-9, 2-for-11 in the first half.
25 of his 29 came in the second half.
And, that was awesome to watch. And also the way that he made plays, hit shots down the stretch. Mm. I doubted Anfernee Simons early in his career. Mm-hmm. And he is proving me wrong, and I love it. I love the sky is the limit for this kid. Like, you know, I really love Anfernee Simons, and that was awesome to see the way that he really carried them to that victory.
Yeah, he's continued to develop, as you mentioned, and has gotten better every year. And what has also impressed me is the way he's been able to navigate through a roster loaded with guards.
Yeah.
And still was able to carve out his own playing time to work his way through, not give up on the process that was going on to be discouraged by what was going on around him. To use Damian Lillard as his big brother to really learn from, it's all helped him out. Clearly the hard work is paying off. And Chauncey Billups recognized that pretty early on with what he had and his potential. And Chauncey,
he empowered him.
Yes, empowered him. That is the perfect word to use. And I think he's doing that right now with a lot of the younger guys.
Yeah.
And the value in these games, as we're watching them, there's a lot to be said for those younger guys that are getting those opportunities now and what they do with these final 20, 25 games, whatever it is, to work with. That's super dope.
Yeah. It's fun to watch.
Yeah. So I think there are opportunities there. You know, the ultimate goal is to lose. You want to lose and improve those odds, but
have it be a fun game that ends in a loss.
There's a chance to be entertained by this team. So that'll be fun too. And you know, Greg Brown III, man. My goodness.
You notice him on the court.
Dude.
Every second he's on the court, you can't take your eyes off him.
I mean, totally.
He's very raw and makes a lot of mistakes out on the court, but man, he's fun to watch.
Potential is there for him as well.
Yep. I think we touched on just about everything we wanted to, but I wanted to ask you a question before we finish. Are you concerned at all about the plan to move forward with Dame and Ant as the backcourt of the future, considering we're once again, I mean, I know that Ant might be 6'4", listed as 6'3", but there's been information out there that he's actually 6'4", and he certainly has a 6'9 wingspan, whereas CJ was 6'5", 6'6". So there is a little bit of difference there, but Ant has not been a good defender to this point in his career. So, two 6'3 guards, are we going down the same road again? What are your thoughts on that?
That's fair, man, and I might get roasted for this. I was probably a believer for too long in the Dame CJ pairing, but I truly believe it's who you surround them with.
Yeah.
So your three can't also be 6'3". Let's start there. So to answer your question in short, yes, I do believe it can work. And, you know, the way this looks now, Anfernee is the heir apparent. Like,
right.
You are grooming Anfernee. Dame is passing the torch to Anfernee when it's all said and done.
He is the point guard of the future for the Blazers, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And so with those two together, I mean, you have buckets. The same way you did with Dame and CJ.
Right.
But what Anfernee is able to do now is, like, I'm truly waiting for that 50-point game now.
Yeah.
That's like the next thing to check off the box, you know? It's like, is he going to do it this year? Is he going to get us 50?
Get it done, Ant.
Yeah, get it done. So, yes, I do think that it can happen, but you got to surround yourself with size and length. Guys that defend, premier defenders. Ben Simmons would have been great. Would have been great.
Jeremy Grant
would be another guy. So
plan,
that has to be the priority, is to cover that position of need. And if you can get two or three of those guys, I think you're right there. And you cover those needs. How about you?
I agree with you. I think the most important thing is who they put on the court with those two. But I also think that Ant, he certainly has more length than CJ did. He's certainly more athletic than CJ was. And if you look at his defensive box score plus minus metrics, he has improved defensively each season. And so I think there's a realistic scenario where he becomes a serviceable or even good defensive player, where I don't know if there were times where CJ's defensive box score plus minus was good. But I do think Ant can be a better defensive option at the two than CJ was. It's not perfect. It's not ideal. Mm-hmm. And that's why they absolutely have to put, you know, long, really good defensive players around those two.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they can make it work.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I can totally see a scenario where we are going to get roasted on this in a couple of years when we say, look, it's the same thing over and over again. Look, you were complaining about what Olshay was doing, and now here you are again supporting the same idea. So that'll be fun to keep the receipts on.
It's okay to change your mind when you're presented with new information,
man. Right. So, you know, we totally went a little bit longer on this podcast, but I wanted to spend the last minute or two giving a salute to the Bucket, the king of the mid-range, crafty Christian James McCollum, one of the Blazers' all-time greats here, man, who was able to do a lot in 9 seasons, Really took off in seven, you know, seasons. Most improved player in the NBA. Will finish as a top five scorer in Blazers history. Second on three-point makes and attempts, only behind Damian Lillard. Top 10 in assists, field goal percentage, you name it. He's done a lot, and his name is peppered all over the Trailblazers record books. So I wanted to ask you, Jared, when you think about CJ McCollum's time here as a Trailblazer, what comes to mind?
Oh, for sure, the Western Conference Finals playoff run. I mean, obviously, the second round series against the Nuggets. But if you look back to the OKC series, I mean, Dame got all the headlines, rightfully so. But CJ was a very impressive number two in that series. And if you go back and look at his stats in that series, he was outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
And they needed that. They needed Dame and CJ to be at the top of their games to beat that OKC team. I mean, if you go back and look at that, you remember OKC beat them all four games in the regular season. OKC, you know, we make fun of that team now because it was Russ and Paul George, and it kind of blew up in their faces.
Right.
But that was a really good team going into that series, and nobody expected Portland to win. And they needed peak Dame
so good.
And peak CJ in that series for that to happen. And then the Denver series, CJ was everything. All the way up to Game 7, where he single-handedly carried the Blazers to the Western Conference Finals for the first time in two decades. He was amazing in that game, 37 points, just hitting, you know, clutch shots down the stretch, that block.
The chase down block, man.
Oh, my gosh. And Blazers fans are going to love CJ McCollum forever. Mm-hmm. And I hope that CJ McCollum loves Blazers fans forever because, listen, I know a lot of Blazers fans wanted him to be traded, but it wasn't because of CJ McCollum. It was because of just this team and that it had run its course. And that has nothing to do with how Blazers fans felt about CJ McCollum as a player or a person. You know, and I think that one thing about CJ that I loved is that he was so much more than just a basketball player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything he was, you know, he's the president of the Players Association in the NBA. I mean, that's amazing. He's an advocate for important causes. You know, he bought a vineyard in Oregon.
Like, how cool is that, right?
You know, he's a dad. Mm-hmm. You know, CJ McCollum is just a really impressive human being, and Blazers fans they're going to love him forever. I mean, every time he comes back to, if Blazers fans don't give him a standing ovation every time he comes back to the Moda Center, then they need to rethink their priorities.
Right.
CJ McCollum is one of the best we've ever seen, and, you know, I'll always love him and love the memories of CJ McCollum playing for the Blazers.
He definitely made the most of his time here.
Yeah.
For sure. And when you come across people like that, or, you know, players in this situation, you often reflect on yourself, you know, and you're like, man, I need to start doing stuff like that. You know, he inspired in a lot of different ways. And I remember when I first got here, now it's probably been like 6 years. One of my first times meeting CJ was actually what he was doing in the community and was working at the Boys and Girls Club. You know, he had pumped a lot of money into there and really believed in the future generation and his community, the kids that are here in low-income areas that didn't have all the nice things. And he was building, you know, computer rooms and places for these kids to go after school. And I thought that was super dope. And what was cool was, you know, wires often get crossed and you think you're going to an event for something and you're told, we're going to do this event, or you're going to get to interview them for 5 minutes at this time or whatever. And it just went off course. Like, the scheduling was so jacked up. I was on deadline, needed to get back to the station. Like, it was crazy. And he was willing to sit down, and I got like a nice long one-on-one sit down with him, where he was just gracious enough to give me a lot of his time. One, to get to know him, and two, to just talk about Portland. And I thought that was really cool. But yeah, being there in Denver for Game 7, to see the way he silenced that arena was legend. It was so cool. The chase down block was wild, but I always remember the celebration, dude. And when they walked off the court, we were able to be in the back, and you were able to see Jody Allen there hugging each player as they would go into the locker room. From where we were, rooms down the hallway for the press conference, you could hear every word and scream and celebration from inside the locker room. That was a first for me, where you could actually hear everything that was happening in there. Yeah. And I remembered the joy that CJ had, the joy that Dame had, like just the emotion. It was like all that hard work, the amount of people who had said it couldn't be done,
right,
with those two leading the way, and they got to the Western Conference Finals. I think there's a lot of pride that was there, and that was the moment, you know, to see your second guy really single-handedly get you that far. But there were a lot of really cool CJ moments, and as an interview, he's very direct and specific,
yeah,
and he will go into the weeds with you. For a writer, that's awesome. Yeah. For a TV person who needs a money soundbite that, right, is, you know, 15 to 20 seconds, not always, but man, when he was on, he was golden, yeah, as an interview. When he was engaged with you, gosh, there were some great just CJ McCollum moments, from him being a killer, the shark.
Right.
there were just so many that I look back on and I was like, gosh, he was so good as being the king of a press conference when he wanted to be. And I liked him because he was okay to let you know I'm having a bad day. Mm. You know? So you saw the human side of him. We were like, man, you knew how CJ felt.
Yeah.
So that was really cool. But the Blazers, I know that had to be a tough day, even though everyone knew it was coming. And like you said, Jared, it's not really about him being a bad player.
No.
Because I think everyone wanted him to stay in Portland. But the situation that they had going on, I can only imagine what that conversation was like between him and Dame.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, a salute to CJ McCollum for his time served here in Rip City with the Portland Trail Blazers, man. Jared, we went almost an hour on this pod, but I think it was a lot of fun and we covered a lot of ground, and it's time to gas up the tank, man, because it's time to lose some games and do this. Thank you guys so much for rocking with the podcast. We appreciate you. Until next time, take care, everyone.